Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. You know, when God took a rib from Adam, I don't know what you think when you think of that picture. It says, God brought her to Adam. To me, that can bring emotion to me. When he opened his eyes, you know, he was in a deep sleep, and God formed a wife for Adam. When he opened his eyes, and there he saw a wife specially made for him. Specially made. The joy that must have come over him, and you know, his words were, "That's bone of my bone. Someone that's made for me, from me." You know, that's a beautiful picture. Today, I would like to just point out that it's not going to work that way for most or all of us, that God is just going to take someone, young men, and lead a wife to you. Today, I'd like to speak about courtship. Not really courtship, because I'm not going to be really talking about courtship. I would like to talk about pre-courtship. What comes before, I was talking to Jesse and Roxanna, and I said, you know, you probably won't even be interested in this. Well, they said, you can tell us what we did wrong. Now, I know that's, you know, there is a pre-courtship. There is a preparation. I would like to speak about the time before courtship. What happens between now and then. You know, there's a, you know, many of us, including myself, my wife and I grew up in a setting where it was just dating. That's just all there was to it. I don't know that, you know, I know there's, you know, we could say, well, what's the difference between courting and dating? And, you know, when we're courting, we have dates. And I understand it's hard to, but I think we know what we mean when we talk about courtship. You know, it's godly, it's under authority, it's hands off, it's you know, in the church, parents are involved. We know what we mean by that. I grew up in a setting where you just simply a young man, and I was, just don't tell anybody, but, you know, we started when we were less than 16 years old and got married at 18, and that's just the culture we were in. So many of us came from a culture like that, and when we came into the circles we're in now, we did not want to continue that. We saw the problems that was there with wrong courtship or wrong dating practices. And as I was mentioning this, and I preached three messages on this in our own home congregation, one of the brothers there, Curtis Overhalser, he came to me and he said, those of you that went through the wrong kind, you really appreciate the right kind. He said, we went through the right kind. They came, you know, the second generation. He said, I appreciate it too. So we have several in our congregation that have went through a right courtship, and they have all expressed to me and another that they really appreciate the way we do courtships. So I'm not going to be talking a lot about that, but I would like to lay some groundwork for the young people here to know, well, what's next? What is the, you know, I told my congregation that I said, if I get done with these messages and you're all scared and not sure you know how to do it, then I haven't done my job. I'm hoping that by speaking about this to you all, that there will be just a sense of settledness come over your heart. What's the next step? Where do we go from here? I believe that it's possible, and I don't know, I don't sense that in this room. But I have been to Bible schools and I've been in churches where it's pretty clear that some of the standards that were upheld in our circles, you know, 30 years ago, you know, there's been some problems. You know, sometimes courtships don't work out. Sometimes young men don't know how to get started. Sometimes they're not under, they don't have a dad in the home that can help them walk through it. And there can be some awkwardness and difficulties. And there's been some of our churches, the more liberal side of our churches, have just started just kind of throwing it all out. Let's just, you know, throw the young people together and see what happens. Because, you know, I came from that, and I don't want to go back there. And I think there needs to be, I think in our circles, it's probably right for us to teach on this a little bit more often so that our young people and parents get a better sense of how this is done. I would like it, I hope, and I'm speaking to the wrong crowd here, but I hope you and your homes, your parents are talking to you about this from the time you're 5 years old on. It's a wrong thing for parents to start teaching their children when they're 18, 19, 20 years old how this is supposed to work. There is a right understanding of the relationship between boys and girls and the whole pre-courtship stage and courtship. This should be something that should be part of the fabric of your makeup, how your mental furniture is arranged, so that you just know how this is supposed to work. So, you know, as I think about some of these young people that decide, oh, it don't work. It's not working. So-and-so, they had a bad experience and it don't work. I would like us to be very careful. I mentioned the other day that Daniel did not kick down the fences. He first wanted to know what the fences were there for. There is a reason why your parents, that's probably most of the people in this room, your parents came away from a courtship or a dating method that was immoral and caused, you know, you think, well, there's problems with our courtship. I can tell you there's problems with the other. I can tell you that from our own experience. I didn't experience the courtship. The last time I told this, I got emotional. I think I can do it without getting emotional this time. But I can tell you that I wish, I would want for you that you would not go through what we went through. You know, praise God, my wife and I never dated anyone else. We don't have that baggage to deal with. We didn't go date around. That was probably a little unusual in our particular setting. It became more, especially in the previous years, dating around was recommended. You know, date a girl every weekend type of thing. That brought a lot of baggage with people. So that is kind of what's driving this. I would like you to know right up front, young people, that marriage is the norm. Getting married is normal. You know, every once in a while, a young man comes to me and they're wondering, well, what's next? Kind of at loose ends. I'm not sure where I'm supposed to be. And you know, anybody past about 21 years old, I'll usually say something like this: has God called you to singleness? Has God called you to be single? So far, all the people I've asked that of, they said, well, no. Well, I'll tell you what: the Bible says that you're called to get married then. Normal, you know, reproduce, multiply, replenish earth. Go to Genesis. The call of most of us is to get married. There is a gift, and there is a few individuals called to be single. God bless you. And we'll talk about that probably tomorrow, just a little bit more. I don't know if I'll totally be balanced, but you'll need to see this message as part one of one's big message. This is not going to be just a nice, neat, tied up, sewed up message. It's going to be two messages and preached in two separate occasions. Some of my burden is today, I just lay it right out in front of you right now. My burden is that the pre-courtship time, the pre-marriage, can be seen as just a time of freedom, just a time to just goof off and play and travel and buy a big truck and go hunting and snowboarding and skiing, whatever your favorite play is. And there's not a heart prepared for this. You know, I'm always a little afraid to say what I'm getting ready to say. Marriage is hard work. Raising children is a big responsibility. And I think some of our young people have heard that so often that they're waiting until they're 25, 26 to even think about it because it looks so big and so scary. I want you to feel the weight and the burden of it, but also see the excitement and the joy of it. There's something, God has placed something in us to get married, to have children, and we should embrace that, not shy away from it, not be afraid of it. Some of our young people, I see more and more just getting older and older and older as young people wait and wait and wait till I don't know what they're waiting on. But God bless you. If you are ready, then get started. I would like to encourage that. That's probably a part of a different message, not in my notes. So, seeking. It is, he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. They're in Proverbs. That is a seeking. That is not, it's not just a matter of, well, you know, wow, ran onto something here. It is actually an effort. It's a process. You work at it. You look around. You seek God on it. So when it, if it looks like, you know, I know a man, and probably some of you do too. You know, I was talking with him about why he never got married. He's older and quite a bit older than I am, I believe. And I said, well, how is it that you never got married? He said, well, I don't know. He said, I just thought it would happen. I don't make any sense today, but somehow I just thought that somehow this is just people, you know, they grow up and they get to a certain stage and pretty soon they're courting and pretty soon they're married. I thought that was going to happen and it never did. You know, and you know, it sounds funny for someone to say something like that, but you know, it is a process. You do have to work at it. There is something in there. Biblically speaking, you know, I think the Catholic Church, and you're not picking on them, but they kind of held up the idea that celibacy, not being married, is somehow way up there. It's way better. You know, you're more spiritual. And there's some to go to and point that out, that there is a gift and there's a calling to the single. There's special work for single people. There's nothing wrong with being single. But by and large, the Bible upholds marriage. At the very beginning, God saw that it was not good for the man to be alone, and he brought a helpmeet for Adam. And for this cause, he made them male and female. Interestingly, the reason why, read it there in Matthew 19, the reason why he created us, two halves of the room here, the reason why he made us this way is so that, for this cause, it says, man will leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife. There is a reason why we're made the way we're made. We're made male and female so that we will get married. That is deeply a part, to go all the way back to a Genesis principle. You go into the book of Ephesians and it speaks about marriage as being a type of Christ and his church. So don't let anybody ever say that somehow it's better not to get married, or you capitulate, you've given in, you've surrendered to the weaker part of yourself. That's not true. You go into the book of Revelation, you're going to find that there is a marriage supper of the Lamb. The very nature of Christ bringing his church back to himself at the last day is compared to a marriage. And it's a bride. Look at the bride, the Lamb's wife. So, why do we talk about courtship? Why do we care about courtship? What's so, you know, the Bible talks a lot about marriage. I haven't laid a lot of scriptures out, but I think you know that. Why do we talk about courtship? And the reason why, I'd just like to lay out here, that the reason why courtship is an important subject is because marriage is an important subject. What we know about marriage. You know, in Matthew 19, Jesus was speaking about if you're going to, you can't get divorced, and if you do get divorced, you remarry, you're committing adultery. There in Matthew 19. And the disciples had an interesting response. Well, if that's the way marriage is, then maybe it's better not to get married. You know, if we can't get divorced, it's there in his disciples saying, if the king the man be so with his wife, it's not good to marry. Matthew 19:10. Well, if I can't get divorced, maybe it'd just be better not to get married. I mean, if I don't have an out here. Marriage, Jesus brought a real solemnity and a real permanence, a binding to marriage. And so that is one of the things, and we'll get there. We need to find out what we're going to base marriage on. Because Jesus made it very important. So therefore, courtship is very important. So if marriage is very important, then understanding what marriage is, understanding what constitutes a marriage, what is a marriage, what God's heart is in a marriage, should help us inform us on what a courtship should look like. Does that make sense? The nature of marriage should affect understandings of courtship. I think everybody that's ever tried to preach on this subject has always found it's hard to go to the Bible. You know, we don't find a lot in the New Testament, period, other than the nature of marriage. We find Jesus took marriage and brought it from kind of a possession level. A man possessed his wife and could almost literally, especially the concubines, could almost literally buy and sell them. It was really a nasty thing. There was the concubinage and there was bride prices and And they'd had two or three or 10 of them or whatever. Solomon had 1,000 of them. The idea was that a wife was just simply a possession. When Jesus came along, no. He brought it to a way higher level and eliminated divorce out of it and brought it to one man and one woman. So that should be one of the principles. So yesterday, I said, I'd like you to read the Bible as a living book. To open the Bible up, what is it saying to us today? So we can go to the Old Testament, we find we can say, well, maybe the Benjamites did it right. You know, you go out in the bushes and you waylay alongside the road, and when you see one come along, you catch her and drag her home. You know, you remember that story. There's 600 Benjamites that were left there in the book of Judges. Well, we don't like that story very well, so we wouldn't use that one. You know, Jacob and Leah, that was an odd story. I mean, let's face it, wake up in the morning and find out it's not the one you thought it was. I mean, come on. I mean, these are not the way we would uphold, the story of Rebecca, Isaac and Rebecca and Eliezer going to get her. That's a beautiful story, but it probably doesn't rise to the level of what we would like to see. So if we're going to use the Bible as a living book, is there principles in the Scriptures to help us understand how courtship should work? Is there principles that we can look to and say, this principle applies and this principle? That's how we read the Bible. If we're born again, we have the Spirit of God, the Bible is spiritually discerned. Is there something in the Bible that we could point to? And I would say there is. I thought about taking, and just don't have the time, I thought about just having you all give what you think the Bible maybe says and write them down. That would take a lot of time, and I've got a lot of ground to cover. So I'll just tell you some of the things you probably have already thought of. First of all, there is the idea of agape love. As Christ loved the church, a husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. How did he give? He died for the church. That would be a principle that applies to marriage, and that should help us understand how a courtship should be done. Does that make sense? The idea of agape love, a husband loving a wife like Christ loves the church. That should be a principle that we can apply to courtship. There would be under authority. There's the idea of brotherhood, the idea that we are responsible one to another, that we are accountable one to another, that we work together as a brotherhood. Well, that should be something. You know, we don't just do courtship how we want to. You know, I've often said that courtship takes two. Often there's always two families, and often there's two churches. And so we can't just come up with our own way of doing things. Courtship has always, down through the centuries and tribal cultures and European cultures, wherever you want to go, there's always been kind of an understanding in a given community, a given society, a given social structure, there's always been an understanding how courtship works. Because courtship is more almost like an institution. A marriage is an institution. It's something that God created. It's something that was here before we were born, and it's going to be here after we're gone. And courtship is very similar. It is a vehicle that you get inside of, it's like a train. You pick the train, you get in it, and you go through a process. And the reason why that's an important point is it's under authority. If two young people are acting this way to each other, we want it to be under authority. They're sitting together, they're facing each other, and they're talking, they're spending a lot of time together. If it's not under authority, then there's something wrong with it. So we expect that there be authority in it, and we'll explain why here in a little while. So that'd be another principle, the idea of a group consciousness, a consciousness of our authorities and the church we're in. In Malachi 2:15, it says that it is for a godly seed. It is, marriage is to raise up a godly seed, and that should inform our courtship. It should inform. My dad used to say to me, that was very often, I heard him say it, never date a girl that you would not want to be the mother of your children. That's something he said fairly frequently to me. I thought it was very good advice. Never date someone that you would not want to be the father of your children. Another principle in Genesis 1:28, is to have dominion. You know, we are called, young men, to have take dominion. We are to build, to plant, to conquer, to create. And we are, the helpmeet is brought into our lives to help us. And it's a word I created, and you can laugh at it if you want to, but I call my wife my co-dominionator. I take dominion, she takes dominion with me. So that should inform our courtship. Purity. We'll go there eventually to 1 Thessalonians 4. You can open your Bible. We'll get there eventually. And we'll see that purity is a part of our relationship one with another. So that should inform what courtship looks like. The value and equal worth of women. I told you that women used to be, in the Old Testament, were largely possessions. In 1 Peter 3:7, it says we're heirs together of the grace of life. Heirs together. So now women have been raised up to something much higher than the Old Testament. So that should help us to understand how courtship should work. The absoluteness of marriage. I've already mentioned it. It's God. Jesus took away the right of divorce. God hates divorce, it says in Malachi. So this should help us to understand courtship is not something you enter into lightly. It's something that's very, if marriage is this permanent, it's this solid, the disciples were even sure they should even get married, well then it should affect how we go into courtship. Courtship should be entered into soberly. And I say that, and I want to be very careful here. It's supposed to be fun too. It really is. Am I making it too heavy? If you're in a courtship and it's not fun, then you're doing something wrong, okay? But if you enter into it with your eyes open, very soberly, thinking about the higher things and how serious and permanent this is it possible to be sober and joyful at the same time? Yes, we're Christians. That's what joy is. That's what joy is. We can be happy at the same time. We can be very serious. When I'm taking communion, I think about that a lot. It's a very sober, sad time, and yet a joyful time. Sad that he died, glad that he died. How do you put that into words? It's a good thing. Courtship should be that way also. So courtship, it's interesting that God uses the metaphor of courtship in Hosea. He speaks about speaking comfortably and alluringly to Israel. The Apostle Paul spoke about espousing the Corinthians. Espousal, that was like you're going to marry Christ, and it's my job to espouse you to Christ. In Isaiah, he speaks about God's relationship to Israel is as a man with his virgin, with somebody he is courting. So courtship is something that God uses as a metaphor of his relationship to the church or to Israel. And I don't want to, like I said before, I don't want to, get all tangled up in terms. Courtship is this and dating is that. The way I would define courtship is that it should be sober, it should be fun, but it should also be intentional. One of the things that makes dating different than courting, to put a label on these two concepts, is that it is for the purpose of getting married. Now, we could talk about that, and that's another whole subject. Too often, I think some people think they started a courtship and they're locked in. And I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds, but I believe that that's not true. Courtship is to find out whether we're going to get married. I think we should enter into courtship with the freedom to know that we can step out of this without shame. We can't step out of marriage without shame, but we can step out of courtship without shame. But it still has intention. It's not just kicking the tires to see what happens. We've prayed about it. We've talked to our authorities. We have the intention that we would like to see whether this person, young man, ask young lady. I would like to encourage young ladies, if a young man asks you, there might be some reason why. No. But if you don't really know, Well, give them a chance. Give them a chance. You know, they might, you might, you know, under authority, you know, if he's not just, you know, I probably shouldn't, I can think of several situations where, you know, the young lady says, yeah, no thanks. I get that. But there's times too when I just don't know who he is and it scares me and I haven't met him and I only saw him once at a Bible school and no. You know, you just out of fear rather than out of just, no, it's not compatible. Give him a chance. Courtship is to be taken seriously, but yet it is a courtship. It is, let's find out. Let's find out whether this is going to work. So, one of the ways we can say it is that dating is to have a good time. And courtship is to explore the possibility of marriage. So we're looking for these principles. These principles that we're looking to understand how a courtship should work. And one of the courtships is, or one of the principles of courtship is that it is under divine authority. Now, the scripture, probably the most commonly used scripture in a children's lesson is, children, obey your parents. Honor your father and mother. Isn't that right? Have you heard, is that what you have in your children's lessons? That's what we do too. Yes, I understand that. And the reason why we use it is because it is an important point. A principle, and we heard it last night from Darwin. A daughter is under a father's authority, under a father's protection, until that authority is turned over to her husband. That is a biblical principle. We could go to several scriptures here. We could take in Nehemiah, he speaks about giving your daughters unto their sons. It's not allowed. They were giving their daughters to the heathen. In Matthew 24, they were marrying and giving in marriage. The idea was that fathers give their sons in marriage and they give their daughters in marriage. There is a fatherly responsibility. And so that is a principle that we can uphold. So stay in divine authority. You know, the beautiful picture that I would have of that, and I didn't grow up with it. It was a new thing to me when it came into these circles. The father walking the bride up the aisle. And often, you know, the young man, you know, is standing here. And there's kind of almost a ceremonial giving over of authority. You know, a transfer of authority. You know, a hug and a little few words and whatever. And then the father gives, you know, hands. And there's a beautiful picture there that I would like you to get. That is a picture that we need to see as a valuable thing. And so, therefore, it is important. Part of that principle is if a young man tries to get the heart of a young lady out from under her dad, you know, the old-fashioned eloping thing, it is just simply outside of God's authority. It is not, the transfer hasn't happened. Father hasn't given his daughter in marriage. And, you know, Darwin was talking about, you know, one of the things we like to see, and I'll talk about a little bit more, is, you know, we want our daughters to be taken care of. We want them to be loved. We want them to be safe. We want the husband to be faithful. Those are things that we as fathers, before I give my daughter to a young man, I want all that to be true. You know, I want to see a young man, I want her to be taken care of at least as well as I would take care of her. So these are things, these are principles in God's Word. I spoke about the idea of marriage being an institution, something that God created. So I would like to now go take you to 1 Thessalonians. Just open that up, and I'll do a little, just have 1 Thessalonians open to 4th chapter. And I have not quite known how to title this next section of the sermon, but I'm going to call it not flirtships, but reserving. No flirting, but reserving. Do you know what a flirtship is? Everybody got that? Have you heard that concept before? Flirtship. That's not a courtship, that's a flirtship. That's when two young people, it can start as early as, what, 12, 13 years old. Pretty soon they got eyes for each other and they're figuring out ways to set together, and everybody kind of figures out. At least the parents are usually oblivious, at least for a while. But everybody in their age group knows that Johnny likes Sally and Sally likes Johnny. You know, and it just goes on and it goes on and it goes on, and of course, sometimes when it's really young, well, then they get over it and they grow up. God bless them. But sometimes it don't get over very quickly. And that's what I would like to speak about here for a little while longer. You know, there's a concept in orchards. In orchards, you plant a small tree, and it can be very small, but it don't take long. You know, they don't have to be very tall. In some spring, an apple tree has two or three apples on it. You know, it's just about this big. And somebody who takes care of apple trees will go along and they'll see that, and they'll just right away pluck those apples off and throw them on the ground. Why do they do that? Why do they throw the apples on the ground, throw them away, when they're a young tree like that? You probably all know that already. It's because the tree, when it is young, needs to be putting its roots down deeper. It needs to be growing a thicker trunk. It needs to be putting its life, its energy, into growing the what will produce more fruit later. And there is a principle that I would like us to understand here this morning, and that is that when a young person, starting out at a young age, begins to be focusing on the other, you know, this half is focusing on that half, and this half is focusing on this half, and there's just this constant, and they sit down with their, you know, the two little girls, 14 years old, they, you know, as soon as they sit down and get away from mom and dad, they're talking about the boys. And the boys, maybe used a little older, maybe 16, they start talking about the girls, and a whole bunch of energy gets used up talking about the other half. And that cute boy, did you see him? And he looked at me, you know. And well, she's awful pretty. And all that can just go on and on. And what happens is, you know, it sounds funny. And you probably, some of you have participated in this. And I did myself. So I'm not being hard on you. As parents, we sometimes, you know, if we scold it and make fun of it, then it goes underground. And then the children won't talk to us about it anymore. We need to understand this is somewhat of a natural tendency. This is not, you know, this is not unnatural. You know, Darwin talked about it the other night. We want, you know, in a courtship, we want two young people to actually have attraction to one another. Maybe we'd even say we want them to physical attraction one to another. It just needs to be under divine order. You know, it needs to be, you know, if I see a courtship going on and there's not an attraction happening, when the emotions aren't there and the physical longings are not there, I want them to not be acting on them, but I want them to be there. There's a difference between having them and acting on them. So I'm not picking on them. I'm not criticizing anybody who's been there. However, there is a need for young people to be putting their energies not to, did you see that cute boy, but rather, what the preacher said today, that was very good. What do you think? That would be much more growth there. Or I have an anger problem. Do you have something you could help me with? I was studying in the scriptures this morning, and I discovered this passage. Have you read it? Wouldn't you grow a lot more? I have trouble getting up in the morning to read, have devotions. Could you pray with me? Is that a lot better conversation than, wasn't she pretty? Would your roots go down deeper? Would that trunk of your tree get stronger to support more fruit later on? That's the question. You know, it's not the fruit's a bad thing on that little tree. It's just too soon. It's not the time. And that's what we're going to talk about for a little bit. In our circles, there was a time, I think, in our circles where there was a concept called sleeping. It was taught in amongst our circles that the young people should just be sleeping. And I don't know what all they meant by that. I'm not critical at all. And I think there is some young men, in fact, I personally know some that did sleep. And that concept was that you don't even think about the girls. You know, it's just not on my radar. I'm not thinking about girls. I'm not thinking about dating. I just, until, you know, they wake up and then they look off across the aisle and there's some, woo, maybe I should get married. You know, they wake up. This idea. For most young people, that's not the way it works. God bless you if you're there. God bless you if that is really, my heart is just free. I'm just totally not thinking about girls. I'm totally not thinking about boys. When God wakes me up, that's fine. Until then, I've got work to do. God bless you if that's where you're at, but most people probably aren't. I was listening to somebody talking, and brothers and sisters, and the question came up, how often do you think about the boys? And one of the girls said, all the time. But, you know, it wasn't that she was thinking about the boys all the time and acting on it. It was just there. It was just something always aware of. And I think that's probably a little more normal. But, so I'm not really recommending sleeping, although God bless you if you have, and if that's what you've been taught, and you're really successful in that, God bless you. But the question is, how do you relate? I'm not speaking so much about what's going on inside your heart and mind. Give that over to the Lord. You know, how often, it happened in our fellowship one time. There was a young lady who had that struggle for a long time and overcame it. She really came to this place where she was free. I don't have to get married. I don't need to start a courtship. I'm fine. She started making plans to become a missionary, and next thing you know, the phone rang. These things do happen. God bless you. That is not, there's different ways these happen. We're not all made the same. So there you are in 1 Thessalonians 4, and I would like to read a scripture. For this is the will of God. I'm jumping right into a thought here, and it's kind of big. It's bigger than this, but it has to do with our purity, our sensual, physical purity. For this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you should abstain from fornication, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles which know not God. And this is the verse I want you to focus on, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified. For God hath not called us to uncleanness, but unto holiness. And I'd like to focus on this concept of defraud. Defraud, what is that? We are men and women. Everyone in the room is one or the other, despite what popular culture is telling you. We are one or the other. So what is defrauding? We are not to defraud one another. We're not to defraud. I wrote down some definitions of defrauding. We're talking about pre-courtship. We're talking about how does young men and young women, and you're going to find later on, how married people are to relate one to another. There's not a difference, actually. So what is defrauding? And these are, I've got six definitions. Giving and receiving our hearts to one another before it is time. To take what is not yours by deception or intrigue or seduction. To take what is not yours. To overreach beyond what God has given. What has God given you? Has God actually given it to you? Is it yours to take? To create an expectation that you cannot rightfully fulfill. To take something that is not lawfully yours. And of course, the other half of it is to, and we see this in marriage, to withhold something that is rightfully owed. So it all has to do with giving and receiving, taking and possessing that is not right. Not right. There was a man that I was hearing about one time. He had a unique situation. He was interested in a young lady from another congregation, but he wasn't sure, and this is all right. You know, sometimes there's this pre-courtship stage. You know, how do I even know whether I want to start a courtship with this person? I don't know her or him very well. In his case, his eyes had been attracted. He'd heard some good things about a young lady in another congregation. And his way of handling that was he went to her ministry and said, would it be all right if I would find ways to observe her. So under authority, with her authorities, they gave him permission to sort of arrange his life and arrange his path in such a way that he ended up in her company at times without her knowing it, because he wasn't sure he wanted to start a courtship. And anyway, he met her in a hallway one day, and he stopped her, and they began to talk. And he began to realize, as they were talking, that his heart was beginning to go aflutter, and there was a drawing happening, and he realized that he was very much attracted to her, but he realized, too, that it was not the time. He had not talked to her parents yet, and he was beginning already to give himself to her before the time, even though it was under authority. The Song of Solomon speaks to that, and that's one of the things, you know, you think about, what is courtship? You know, I've often wondered why the Song of Solomon, maybe you have too, why Song of Solomon is in the Bible. And some people have made a huge, big allegory out of it. Allegory of Christ and his church. And that's fine. I'm not opposed to that interpretation. But I will point out to you that however you want to interpret the Song of Solomon, it is still using the concept of courtship and marriage as a metaphor for Christ and his church. It's still using that concept. And in that very scripture, three times, it says this: I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that you stir not up nor awake my love till he pleases. There is, even in that beautiful account of the Song of Solomon, there's a wrong time. It's not time yet. It's not time yet. There is a time for it. So defrauding. We are not to defraud. We're not to take something that is not ours. And we'll try to get very practical here in just a little bit. Tomorrow's message will be more practical. This is laying out some foundations. In Romans 14:9, let us therefore follow after things which make for peace, and the things wherewith one may edify, and it means to build up, strengthen one another. It is good to avoid, I put that in there, to avoid doing anything whereby thy brother stumbleth, or is offended, or is made weak. In 1 Corinthians 10, 23 and 24, it basically says we are to seek the good of others. And the concept of, in the context of it, it is in doing things that would cause someone to stumble. We are to seek the good of others, and we are responsible to not cause others to stumble. Is that a principle you all understand? We are not to bring stumbling into the lives of other people. And that includes young men. It includes the stumbling in the hearts of the girls over here and young ladies in the hearts of the young men over here. You have a responsibility not only to guard your own hearts, and there's a limit to how far you can go with this, but you do have some responsibility to help guard the hearts of the other. That is a scriptural principle. So, men and women are attracted differently. And this is something you all need to know. You probably already do. Young men and men, I'm a man, we are programmed by God. We are created, we're engineered by God to look for a mate with our eyes. We look. That is something very important usually to a young man, is the look. What a woman looks like. Interestingly, that's with the eyes. The opposite is true of the women. They use their eyes to attract the other half. And I've seen it over and over. You know, every once in a while I see a young lady that's very good with her eyes. I mean, she knows how to use them. It is amazing. That is something that's a gift to not cultivate. I'll show you why here in just a moment. In Proverbs 6:25, it says this: lust not after beauty in thy heart, speaking about an adulterous woman, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. It is very real. Women are also motivated to attract with I should say it the other way around. Men are attracted to a flattering tongue. You go there to Proverbs 6 and you'll see that. The men are, if a young lady will talk to a young man and speak to him, how strong you are, how good looking, I really like your truck, you really did, you know, make it spiritual, you know, you really did a good job with devotions this morning. You flatter a young man, you will turn his heart very quickly. And the opposite is true. Now, these are all generalities. This is true of the young ladies. Young ladies are very attracted to a young man who will listen. If a young man will act like he hears, oh, he's just a really good listener. You know, it's interesting how often a young man who's a really good listener while they're dating becomes a very bad listener after they're married. Watch out for that. That happens a lot. So there's different ways. And so these principles, these understandings one of another should help us to understand how to treat one another so that we're not defrauding one another. You don't belong. There's a few courting here, and that's God bless you. But there's a few of, most of you are not courting. And so therefore, if you begin to attract one another in these ways, you're defrauding one another. You're stealing a heart. In the Song of Solomon, it speaks about this, and once again, it speaks about his beloved's eyes twice there. And you know, is that a bad thing? Is it a bad thing for a woman to use it? No, God gave her those eyes. And I would counsel any married woman, and there's a few in the back here, use your eyes. God bless you on your husband. You know, that's what God gave you that gift for, is to win your husband, not to win a husband. Does that make a sense? So there's different ways we defraud one another. You know, I saw a t-shirt on a woman recently, forget where now, and it said something, I didn't write it down at the time, but it said something like this. My way of dressing does not imply permission. My way of dressing, you know what that means? You know, there's a big hoopla here lately, the Me Too movement. Basically, it's saying, you know, some of these men have said, well, the way she was dressed, I thought she was available. And so, no, we do not, you know, just because I'm dressing seductively doesn't mean that I'm available or I've given you permission. Now, that's ultimately defrauding. That is probably the highest form. You know, I am available. It's false advertisement. It's false advertisement to say I'm available and yet I'm not available. You can see that principle. You know, we wouldn't do that here. It speaks there in Proverbs, it speaks about the adulterous woman, and she has an impudent face. It says in the Old King James, it'd be a bold face. The Bible, the New Testament says, in 1 Timothy, it says that we should be with shamefacedness and sobriety. I believe, you know, we often, you know, lay that burden on the women, and that is, the Bible does do that. But there is something about eye contact. You know, there is a principle out there of in the modern dating game where they tell these people they're meeting online and they only have one chance to meet each other at a restaurant. They say, look into one another's eyes. And that'll bring that spark. So it's both ways. But we are told in the Bible that there is, and we'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow, how can we have a conversation if we can't look at each other directly in the face? So flattery of the tongue, the admiring look. You know, I tell married women, flatter your husband. You know, you're not stroking his ego. You're making him, you're building bonds. You but if you do that to a young man, young lady, you will be pulling his heart before it is time. So, young ladies should not single out a particular young man to speak words with body language and eyes, admiration. That is something that shouldn't be. And also, the other way around. Young men should not be going to young ladies before it's time. And how are you doing? Are you okay? You know, how was your devotional life this morning? You know, you start getting into someone's heart like that, and it don't take long. And that's robbing one another's heart. Sometimes a young man, we had a young man in our country, he's now married, and waters under the bridge, but he was one of those that was very gifted at just mixing with people. He would mix with the old people. He'd mix with the young people. He'd mix with, I counted him as one of my dear friends. He was very good at talking and listening to people. And one of the ways, and we should, I'm probably jumping ahead of my message here, but one of the ways we can keep from stealing hearts is just to treat everyone alike. There is something very good about that. He was one of our, probably one of the few people I know of that could do that very successfully. He was very good at that. Because what happens a lot of times is, and I think it's probably a weakness of girls more than boys. Boys have their weakness, big time. I'm one. I know all about it. It has to do with our eyes. But young ladies are very susceptible to a young man. If they, even the hint of special attention, all of a sudden, oh, he likes me. He looked at me. He opened the door. And pretty soon they've got wedding bells ringing off in the future. And they've got their hearts tied. And I have seen, and it's sad when I see a young lady who has went through this process, and even to the point where, you know, they've built a huge tower on a really, really small foundation in many cases. And in a couple of cases that I would know about, they've turned down some very good options for a courtship, waiting on this one that they got hooked with a long time ago. So young men, speak with the awareness. This is something you need to be careful of. Your guarding hearts. Remember, we're not going to defraud one another. Be very careful that what you would say, well, that was just a good conversation, might be being interpreted as, he likes me. Special. I'm special. One of the things that happens with this whole thing of flirting and these flirtships is, and if you've been involved in it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Flirting brings a dopamine effect. Our dopamine is our pleasure. When we get a dopamine hit, it's like, whew, we really feel good. And when we have given our hearts to someone, and we kind of, since they've given their hearts to us, you know, we got our eyes going back and forth, and we had this little conversation going. We go home, we're feeling all charged and kind of fired up a little bit. We get to liking that pretty well. And in the world, in the heathen world out there, where they have the dating game going, there's people that just get addicted to that. And that's part of the reason why there's a lot of unfaithfulnesses within marriage, because you get addicted to that charge. Don't start it. Don't get it started. You know, somebody said it this way, I'm not going to let her charge her batteries on me. I'm not going to get very far here. I'll just say this one thing about flirting. It's not flirting. I plan to ask her for a courtship someday. Have you ever heard that excuse before? I've heard it before. It's not flirting. We're just playing ping pong. It's not flirting. We're just friends. Have you heard any of those excuses before? I'll say this to you young ladies. Your peace and your happiness, I'd ask the married women in the room, and they're going to support this. Your peace and your happiness, your overall safety in your life comes as you give yourself someday in marriage to a man who is under authority. Do you believe that? Is that something, am I saying something that's odd? If you give yourself to someone under authority, that is your safest place to be. Why is that? It's because if a man is under authority, then the wife is in a safe place because the husband knows that he is answerable to God and to his brothers, and you have found yourself in it. So my advice to you is, if a young man is trying to get your attention outside of authority, he's trying to get your attention and he hasn't talked to your dad yet, he hasn't talked to his dad yet, and he's trying to get your attention, I would run as fast as you can away from that young man. Don't, you know, it's very flattering. I understand. It's very flattering. He likes me. He really is interested in me. I can tell. He's chasing me down. And you're going to be tempted to respond. You're going to be tempted to respond in kind. I would say, young lady, run. And anybody, I could take you to wives who have married men who were not under authority, and there's been usually a lot of regrets. So keep that in mind. Young lady and young men, If you can see that a young lady is making herself very available to you, Proverbs says it this way about the adulteress: when she's loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. If a young lady is making herself very available to you, I would run. I'll give you that. A young lady that is making herself available to you is not usually that usually. You know, one of the things I've seen on both sides of the aisle here, if someone has a tendency just to be almost uncontrolled around the opposite sex, they're flirting all the time. You mark my word, whether it's a boy or a girl, they have a bad relationship with their dad or their mother. Almost every time. That is just a given. You can say, oh, she's awful flirty. She's always got her eyes on the boys. Go ask her preacher. He'll probably say, yeah, she has a struggle with her dad. That's often the case. And so, young man, do you want a young lady in your life who does not get along with her dad? Oh, of course, the dad's he's no good anyway. Maybe that's the case. That could be. But I can tell you, if she has not found her way under her dad, even as hard as it was and is, it's going to be a difficult marriage for you someday. So if you see a young lady chasing you down, it's a good chance you probably better run. So how are young people to relate one to another? One of the sisters in our church recently said it this way. She said, a young man earns the right to talk to my daughter if he'll talk to me and the other ladies in the room. And he'll talk to the grandmas. You know, if he's going to talk to the pretty girls, he better talk to the ugly ones too. I thought that was a very interesting observation. That's a quote. A rough quote anyway. And I already mentioned everyone alike. You know, if you're going to be, you know, we have a young lady in our congregation who is very complimentary. She tells me I preach a good message sometimes, and she's very much just a gadfly. She's here and she's there, and she's very fun to be with. And I will say this about her, that she's very good at communicating with everyone. I don't know, maybe some of the boys think that she's got a special attraction to them. I don't know. I would just say that if you have a hard time talking to people, but you tend to want to talk to that person, then you need to learn some social skills, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. Something else, you know, I don't want you to be giving the cold shoulder. You know, I've seen this in real life. Somebody has an attraction to a certain girl, and that's the one they treat the worst. You know, everyone alike means you don't treat the ones you actually are attracted to badly. One young lady said to me, she said, if I like a boy, that's the one I stay away from. There may be something to that. My son was a little that way. He's courting now, and the young lady just had no idea. She just thought she probably was the last one on the list, and he was treating her that way because he was first on his list. And there's something good about that, but there's also something, treat everyone alike. Would you be comfortable if your parents acted that way? You know, I don't know. To some sisters, I don't know all of them's names, but you know, if you saw me acting towards a sister here in the room, would you be comfortable if I acted the way you're acting towards someone on the other side? Is that a test? Is that a fair test? Treat them as you would the spouses of your married friend. Do you have married friends? My daughter is older. She's 33, and she gave me this one. She says, you know, one of the ways that I have learned to relate to men is to relate to them as if they are the spouse of my best friend. I know how I relate to them. As your parents do the spouses of their married friends. I have several good friends in our congregation, and they have wives. And I relate to them. But I relate to them in a very reserved way. As someone you who will someday belong to someone else. As you would want your friends to treat someone who belonged to you. And this one came from one of our sisters in our church. As you would relate if the one you were going to marry was watching. Someone in this room, maybe someone in this room, young lady, is your husband, and vice versa. And you, you're relating to this girl over here. And this, what if your spouse or your future spouse was watching? Would you want her to be watching, or would you want him to be watching? These would be ways how to relate one to another. Now, how does this all apply? I've got just a few minutes left. How does this all apply? Most of you in this room are going to be married someday. You're not going to be at this pre-courtship stage. You're going to be married someday. And something I would like to end with is I would like to point out that I am asking you, I am hoping I'm teaching you something that you will be applying the rest of your life. Now, it's true, I have made vows to my wife, vows of fidelity, vows of faithfulness, and there is a little, different category between a husband and a wife. But in the scripture, it says that we are, in speaking to married people and to unmarried, we're to flee fornication. We're to flee youthful lust. And I would like to challenge us that I have to relate to the opposite sex the exact same way I'm asking you to relate to the opposite sex. It is not a burden on you that is not on me. The married people in the room, all of us, you know, if you watch your mom and dad, wouldn't you be terribly uncomfortable? You know, just think of the flirtiest girl you know. You know, think of the boy craziest or the girl craziest boy that you know. You know anybody that's a little bit boy crazy or girl crazy over here? Any of you know? Nobody? Oh, good. We got it. Perfect. All right. Nope. No girl crazy boys, and there's no flirty girls. You don't know any? Well, so this is not going to be a good this will be a bad illustration. But think of that person, if you can, or imagine that person. Now, how would you feel if your dad or your mother treated the other half of the world that way? It'd be kind of icky, wouldn't it? Dad's talking to that lady over there. That's not right. You'd be uncomfortable with that, wouldn't you? Would you be uncomfortable with that? Yeah, you would, wouldn't you? Now, is it unfair to say that what you would expect, you know, hopefully your parents have friends and they, you know, they have friend, their spouses, and you probably saw them interact with each other. You would probably, maybe, hopefully you like the way they interact. That is a picture, somewhat of a picture of how you should be relating one to another, to the other half of the room. So what's the point of all this? It's for emotional fidelity. You know, this is your heart. I'm a really bad artist. You already figured that out. This is your heart. And so in the world that we live in, you know, if you happen to have grown up in a setting where they haven't taught these things very well, and you know, a young man, you know, Sally moves into the congregation, and you really like Sally. She's awful pretty, and you played a game of a spike ball with her, and you really interacted well, and you start daydreaming about her. You give a little bit of your heart to Sally. Now your heart's a little different now, isn't it? And you young lady, you know, Jim, he's really good. He sings well, and he's very charming. He's good looking, and you like to spend time with him, and you begin to fantasize and daydream about him and maybe make eyes to him. And pretty soon, you've given him a little bit of your heart. And this could go on, and, you know, maybe somebody else, and pretty soon, a little bit more. And finally, someday it comes along, you're finally old enough, and you finally went through the authorities, and you finally asked your dad, and everything's working out right. And by this time, when you come to marriage, in many ways, this is the heart you're bringing to that marriage. Now, I don't want to overemphasize that. God can heal things and bring beauty for ashes. But I did talk to a couple one time, and they were about our age. And we were talking about some of these things, and they was talking about some of their marriage trouble. And they came from a dating around culture. And they said the biggest thing that comes between us is all these relationships that we got ourselves tangled up in. and that has come between us in our marriage. You know, that's the one thing. I grew up in a dating culture that I only dated one girl, so I don't have that to deal with. And one of the things that I think happens to us, the reason why we get caught up in these things, is because there's a fear. Have you ever heard of the concept of FOMO? It's an acronym, FOMO. Has anybody heard of FOMO? Yeah, fear of missing out. You hear it in the financial world a lot. People will jump on a bandwagon for an investment. You know, crypto is going up, or real estate's going up, or Amazon stock is going up, and they'll get on. They're afraid they're going to miss out on this gravy train that's going up the mountain, and this fear of missing out, FOMO. And I think sometimes young men, we're afraid that some other young man is going to get that girl, or he's not going to notice me. He needs to know I'm available. And so there's the fear of missing out. The fear of missing out can cause a lot of wrong relationships. And I would just like to point out this. Matthew 6:33 says, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness." And all these things, it's a faith issue, young people. You don't have to jump in this, on this. You can wait, and under authority, God will bless it. "Fear not, little flock, it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Your heavenly Father knows what you have need of before you ask." So we'll just end abruptly right there, and we'll pick up tomorrow with some practical pointers. God bless you.